League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Giants lead the Cubs 5-2. They are three outs away from sending this series back to Wrigley Field. The 2-1 and a fastball swung on and grounded past the diving Crawford into left field. A base hit for Bryant. And the Cubs have the leadoff man aboard here in the ninth inning. And Bruce Bochy is out of the dugout already, and he wants the left-hander Lopez. And they're on their feet waving their towels around again here at AT&T Park. Lopez looking for an all-important out. 3-2. Outside ball four. Rizzo will draw the walk, and the tying run will indeed come to the plate. Sergio Romo, the closer, the guy who gave up the Chris Bryant home run last night. He sets, deals, and a swing and a ball hit down the right field line. A fair ball, and it's going to get all the way down into the corner. Bryant is in to score. Rizzo held at third on an RBI double by Zobrist. And it's 5-3. And he does make the move now for the left-hander, Will Smith. This ballpark is so quiet right now. They are so nervous here in San Francisco. The 1-1 to Contreras. A swing and a ground ball. And it's going to sneak through into center field. A base hit. A bouncer up the middle will score two. And Wilson Contreras has tied the game here in the ninth inning. And the Cubs have scored three runs. Hayward shows bunt. Gets it down, but hard back to the mound. To second one on the first. A wide throw by Crawford goes out of play. And Hayward will take second. Could have had two there. Instead, they get one. A stunning turn of events, to say the least, here in the ninth inning as the Cubs have scored three runs to tie it. Now Strickland. Here's the 0-2. And a swing and a ground ball. Base hit up the middle into center. Hayward around third. He will come in to score. Javier Baez with an RBI single has given the Cubs a 6-5 lead. Chapman trying to send the Cubs on to the next round. The set, the pitch, and a swing and a miss. He got him. Aroldis Chapman strikes out the side in the ninth, and the Chicago Cubs are moving on to the National League Championship Series.
You know, myself, I just told myself, get on base, and anything can happen. And Riz worked an unbelievable at bat, taking a walk, and then Zobrist obviously working a hitter's count, and then getting runs on second and third, and anything can happen there. And Wilson coming up huge off the bench on a tough lefty, and then Javi coming up huge. I mean, the best win I've ever been a part of.
I thought the first game of the series was the best game I've ever been a part of, but this one has to top it. Come back like we did was amazing. In the ninth inning there, did very well, packed it in, relied on Lester for game five, but we don't quit. We never quit all year, and this is amazing, and the boys are enjoying it.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What is going on? Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Great to have you aboard. We've got a very, very interesting program lined up for you today because there are a lot of really, really great events coming up. That's why. It is kind of all over the place a little bit, too. We're going to talk a little NBA in the preseason with Aaron McMahon coming up in about an hour at about 4:05 of MLive.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Pistons preseason preparation and the injury to Reggie Jackson, who's going to be out for a bit. So that's coming up at 4:05. At 4:40, we are going to talk with Jason Candle, University of Toledo head football coach, as the I-75 rivalry is renewed once again coming up on Saturday at the Glass Bowl. We'll get his thoughts on the matchup with BG. Doesn't look to be a very competitive one at this moment in time. BG just 1-5, and the Rockets are 4-1. So that's coming up on Saturday. We'll talk to him at about 4:40 or so. And coming up at 3:35, a really interesting college sports discussion. Not about wins and losses or X's and O's or rankings or rivalry matchups or anything else, but about recruiting. Now, why are we talking about recruiting in season? Well, the reason why is because almost every coach in the Big Ten, and I do indeed emphasize almost, there is one very notable exception to this, but almost every coach in the Big Ten believes early signing days need to be engaged. They need to be applied. They need to be put in, however you want to phrase that. But they need to be accepted as a part of recruiting for players who know exactly what school they want to go to. 13 of the 14 Big Ten head coaches have said, yes, we think there should be an early signing day or two. Some of the discussions include perhaps one in late June, one in mid-December, and then, of course, the existing one in early February. And 13 of the 14 coaches say it is the right thing to do to let these players who know exactly where they want to go, go ahead and sign early in the recruiting process so they're not hassled by recruiters and coaches at other schools all the way up until February, getting in the way of their studies and their own preparation, etc. The one notable holdout, which I think you may or may not be surprised, I guess, to hear, is the guy who has owned this conference pretty much, winning a national championship right after taking over for Jim Tressel in Columbus. And that, of course, well, technically he didn't take over for Tressel. but Urban Meyer is the only holdout. And he says, no way, we should not be instituting any such thing. These are 17-year-old kids. They deserve the right to decommit and recommit as many times as they want to before February in the recruiting process. Now, is that just really looking out for 17-year-old kids, or does he have an advantage and an ability to help make recruits late in the process decommit from the schools they have chosen and come to Columbus? So it's a really interesting story. And we're going to talk a little bit about that with Bill Landis, who covers the Ohio State Buckeyes, and Coach Meyer very closely for the Northeast Ohio Media Group. So all of that coming up this afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Mr. Jim Cushlin is here as well, and what an unbelievable way to end a playoff series last night. We thought the Indians did something really remarkable and special when they swept the Boston Red Sox. This wasn't a sweep, but what the Chicago Cubs did in beating the San Francisco Giants last night with four runs in the top of the ninth to complete an improbable, almost impossible comeback, down 5-2 going into the ninth inning against a team that had won its last 10 straight in elimination games in the postseason. They just don't lose when everything is on the line. It's why they won three championships, for crying out loud. What they did last night against the San Francisco Giants might have been two things: ending the dynasty of the Giants and unbeatability isn't the word. Kush, help me out.
I'll go even year luck.
No, but I mean,
it's not luck.
Okay,
though.
But none of it is luck. None of it is
That's
luck.
That's true.
You know, I mean, it's kind of cute. It's kind of coincidental that, you know, when it's an even year, they seem to get it done. But I mean, just they're I can't believe I'm not thinking of the word right now. This is what I do for a living. I'm a wordsmith. I come up with these things anyway. But their dominance, their simple dominance in elimination games, that was eliminated, ironically enough, or not, or perhaps redundantly. But at the same time, maybe this was an indication that the curse has been lifted as well. This is one of those situations where, you know, the bad luck of the Cubs is supposed to be, you know, rearing its ugly head. They're supposed to be sweeping away the San Francisco Giants, at least in 3 out of 4. They're not supposed to be losing 2 straight in San Francisco. They're not supposed to come back to Chicago with more pressure on their heads than they could ever imagine, tied 2 games apiece against the team that needed a wild card just to get there. They weren't supposed to come back losing 5-2 in San Francisco in game 4. They weren't supposed to do that, and then when the pressure got to be too much for them, watch the Giants celebrate on their home field at Wrigley. That wasn't supposed to happen. And thanks to that unbelievable ninth inning that you just chronicled a bit there in your montage, they aren't coming back in those circumstances. They did finish off the San Francisco Giants. They did end the Giants' dominance in these elimination games the way that we just described. And maybe it is time for people to start saying, you know what, the curse is about to be lifted. Whether it be Billy Goat related or anything else, it is about to be lifted.
Am I
crowning them world champions yet? No. There's still the Nationals and the Dodgers. They will play game 5 tomorrow. So I'm not saying they're there yet. And then, of course, the Cleveland Indians, who are trying to break their own long losing record in terms of years without a championship since 1948. You know, they would certainly like to have this thing in, too. But last night, the way things went, it really indicated, you know, the end of two things, perhaps. One, the dominance of the Giants and their dynasty and their, you know, three championships in the last 6 years. And two, possibly the Cubs. Bad luck, which has led to their futility. Go ahead.
You know, and a couple things in my head when I'm thinking of this, as I saw this late last night myself. On the one hand, just throwing this out there for posterity for the rest of the month. Now that the Giants are gone, there are five teams still alive because you have that Washington Dodgers series. We'll have that game five, by the way, for you tomorrow night here on the ticket. Somebody is winning a World Series for the first time in quite a while, because the most recent World Series win by any of the five teams remaining would be the Blue Jays with the Joe Carter thing from 1993, because Dodgers haven't won since 88. We know about the Indians, know about the Cubs, and the Nationals, formerly Expos, have never won one. In fact, never won a pennant either, and gone to a World Series. So somebody's winning a World Series now officially for the first time in quite some time. And, you know, in the montage, I kind of went batter by batter, because one of these side themes I've noticed, Bob, during these playoffs, and it started with the play-in games, is all the fun debates and questioning of managers' moves. And no matter what Bruce Bochy did in that ninth inning, it blew up in his face. He went to reliever after reliever after reliever, and nobody could get it done. And just the various things we've been talking about with Buck Showalter and how Francona's managing it, I had to include that step by step. And I'm sure that's one of those situations, though, you can't really blame Bochy for his calls of which guys to go in there. Just simple fact of the matter, in this case, nobody got it done. But I just find it fascinating, because the side theme so far in these playoffs to me has been, how have the managers been handling these? Some have been doing it bad, depending on your point of view. Some doing it good. And some are now just throwing everything at the wall and nothing is sticking.
Well, you know, this is Terry Francona said this in response to Lonnie Chisenhall getting that base hit, or excuse me, not that base hit, that three-run home run against David Price when he's hit 217 all year long against lefties. He was asked about that. You know, what was it that made you do that? What was it that gave you the hunch that Lonnie could get something done here? And Terry Francona said simply, you know what? Sometimes good players just make you look a lot smarter than you are. And that's the end of the discussion. Sometimes good players make you look smarter than you are. Sometimes it's not me, it's the players. They've got to go out and do their job. And you say, you know, well, what a masterful job he did of working his bullpen in that game. You know, we'll go back to game one for the Indians and Red Sox series. You know, I mean, what a brilliant stroke of genius for Terry Francona to go out there and get Trevor Bauer out of the game midway through the fifth, and to go to his sixth, seventh, or eighth, usually seventh, eighth, and ninth inning specialty, you know, late inning closer type of guy, Andrew Miller, and to go get him and put him in the fifth, which he has never been before. I mean, that's brilliant. But you know what? If Miller goes in there unprepared in the fifth because he's just not used to going that early and gets knocked around, does Miller take the blame or does Francona take the blame? People are going to say, why did you use him out of character? Why did you use him in a place where he's not used to it? So Bruce Bochy last night tried everything he could. And you know what? I can't imagine. I'm not going to criticize Bochy any more than I was going to criticize Buck Showalter for the American League wildcard decision not to use Zach Britton. It's just a matter of you play your hunches. Sometimes you got to play the percentages. You do want to go matchups with lefty on lefty and righty on righty if you can possibly do it. But at the end of the day, Bochy's not throwing the balls and strikes. And guess what else? Joe Maddon is not swinging the bat either. His players had to swing the bats. Ben Zobrist had to swing the bat. These guys had to do their jobs. And so the managers, and I think we all know this from years and years of covering and watching and analyzing and breaking down sports, but in all truthfulness, you know, managers do get too much credit when teams win, and they get too much blame when teams lose. Ultimately, players have to do it. Ask the Tigers. Remember this, Kush? What was it, mid-May or late May or whenever it was when, Brad Ausmus was on the hot seat.
Right.
The fans were going nuts. The fans were chanting, and they wanted him gone. And Victor Martinez got visibly and verbally upset and said in press conferences or to reporters that this is ridiculous. He said, he's not playing. We are. If we're screwing up, blame us. And, oh, by the way, the inference there, too, is obvious. When we do well, praise us. But this is not the manager's fault. He's putting us out there, and we have to do our jobs. And if we're not doing our jobs, how can people hold it against him? That's just the way that it is in sports, but particularly in baseball, where managers watch their players do great things and then sit there and enjoy the adulation. And when they watch their players do crappy things, they've got to sit there and take the heat.
Yeah, they do. And it, like I said, for me, it was just fascinating because the manager stuff has been a nice side story so far for these playoffs. But, you know, circling it all back around for that game last night, I know there were plenty nervous probably in Chicago with their supposed curses and all that stuff. You see, down by three in the ninth, everyone's like, oh, man, we have to come back for a game five. I've seen this kind of thing before. And, you know, to the Cubs players' credit, they're not bothered by this stuff that's going on, and they get the advance now to the NLCS, where of course they'll have home field because they're the only team in baseball that won 100 games. And I'm very interested to see which team they end up matching up with, because based on that other series, I have no idea who I'd call right now for that game five in the other NLDS.
Oh, I am. I think it's the Nationals game to win, and I think they will. They'll be at home.
It'll be Scherzer.
Will be too much. Sorry?
It'll be Scherzer.
It'll be Scherzer. Exactly that. Kershaw just went, so he won't be there. He won't be a factor in this whole thing. So I absolutely think the Nationals have the inside track to getting to Chicago for that first game at Wrigley Field. To the point that I was making earlier on, regarding these playoffs, Major League Baseball playoffs, Jason Stark wrote this afternoon a very interesting piece. Wait till this year; it's time to believe in the Cubs. Now, as I said, maybe this amazing comeback last night was an indication that all of that bad stuff that continues to plague them in the playoffs, all of that bad stuff that stops them from breaking the 1908 curse, that maybe it's over. Jason Stark is saying, it's just, I'm sorry, quote, I said that something bad was going to happen, and when it does, we have to stay in the moment and maintain our composure. The manager of the best team in baseball was saying this Tuesday night I think this is the name of a champagne. No wonder I can't read it. I was just about to read a word that's in French.
I found the story, too, and I'm trying to read it. I'm like, you know what?
Coquette cochère Clemente Lemieux. I think I just did it.
That's nice. Pretty good.
I have no idea how to speak French. I mean, none. I never took a lesson. I can say oui, oui, and that's just about the end of it. Or I surrender. That's all I can do in French. All right? But this one looks like, tout est clocher Clément de Lemieux. Gushed around him like a waterfall. That's the thing. He said, that was the exact message. Something bad is going to happen because it always does. End quote. That was Joe Maddon warning his troops. Something bad is going to happen because we are who we are. And the fact that it didn't, the moment that the manager warned them about had arrived, it didn't happen. They came back, scored four runs, and maybe this is the indication that it is the Cubs' time. The only thing, and I say this with mixed feelings, because I, under almost any other circumstances, I would join the rest of the baseball world and rooting for the Cubs to win the World Championship, to end that streak, because it's a good group of guys. Joe Maddon is a great manager. Theo Epstein has done a remarkable job in putting this thing together. I'd be rooting for them. I have no reason not to. There aren't any unlikable personalities. They're at the center of that team. Like, you know, a lot of times you may just dislike a team because of the unlikable guys that make up its core. For example, the old Yankees when Clemens was the guy and I couldn't stand him. You know, a lot of people would say the same thing about A-Rod. A lot of people would say the same thing about the Giants in the early 2000s of Bonds, Barry Bonds. They couldn't stand him, so you'd root against them. They don't have any unlikable guys that I'm aware of anyway. For me, in the Rangers case, Rougned Odor, who got swept by the Toronto Blue Jays. So there's no enemies over there. It's just a great team, and it's a great story, and I want to see great things happen to them. Now, as it happens, they may, God willing, and knock on wood, they may end up facing my favorite team, the Cleveland Indians, in the World Series. And if they did that, of course, I could not root for the Cubs. But having said all of that, Jason Stark says, why not this year? Maybe this is the year. Wait till this year, because the Cubs have something special happening. They didn't get, the moment that bad things happened to them in Game 4 yesterday, it came and it went without them losing. It came and it went with them actually making the plays to win. And he's saying that means maybe this is their year to win. the good news about all of that, Jim Cushlin, is that this is also the same guy who picked 1 week ago or a week and a half ago, and we had Jason Stark on the air with us. He picked the Red Sox to win the entire thing. He said the Red Sox would not only beat the Indians in the ALDS, but they would advance to the World Series and win the World Championship for John Farrell. So that's what he thought was going to happen just literally, a week and a half ago? And now the Red Sox have been swept away. The Cubs have just closed out the Giants, and it's looking like, well, it's not looking like anything yet. I think it's going to look like a Cubs-Nationals NLCS. And then, of course, we already know the American League series between the Indians and the Blue Jays. But Stark says, and I think he's speaking for a lot of people, there's just something in the air. There's something in the water. And last night, there was something at the stadium out there in San Francisco or in the ballpark in San Francisco that said the Cubs' time has maybe officially arrived.
Yeah, and that's going to be one of the obvious storylines as we keep going through October, Bob. And I'm very curious, and of course, I'm totally with you. I probably would be pulling for the Cubs as long as they don't play the Indians.
Yeah, exactly. And I think most of baseball, as long as you're really a hater, I mean, who would not? Cardinals fans, maybe, because there's a rivalry there. Cardinals fans might not like this. But just about anybody that doesn't have some sort of a natural geographical or some kind of rivalry is going to be saying, hey, come on, the lovable losers, the Cubbies, are finally going to get theirs. That, and you know what? The timing is right, too. Think about this. The longest streaks in sports that really people have talked about of, you know, championship droughts have been ending recently. Obviously, that's been about a decade, right, since the Red Sox finally won for their first one.
Yep.
Under Terry Francona, of course, since 1918. Finally, just this past June, the city of Cleveland won theirs in any sport with the Cavaliers. So here we are, you know, just a couple of months later in October. Is it time? Could it be that the Cubs finally lift the longest drought in all of sports going back to 1908? It very well could be. And when you look at the way the season started, they started the year 8-1, 17-5, 25-6. They have not been out of first place literally all season. They had one day that they weren't in first place. They held a 9-game lead by the fourth day of May. 1 month in, they have just dominated the sport.
That's like sounding like the 95 Indians with some of those numbers you just said.
That's very true. That's very true. So, you know, but that's what we're looking at here. A team that just might have found its destiny, that maybe this is the year it is all supposed to happen. So just something to think about as we get into it again this afternoon. I want you to be a part of it, too. We do have a lot of guests, but we will try to make time for your phone calls at 866-240-1065. Whether it be on baseball, basketball, football, it doesn't really matter, college and pro. We have a lot of that to get into. In fact, coming up here in just a couple of minutes, we are going to talk more college football, back at it, with Bill Landis, who covers the Ohio State Buckeyes. But we're not going to be talking about a preview of Ohio State and Wisconsin. We're going to be talking about Ohio State coach Urban Meyer being the only Big Ten coach, the only holdout, who says, I do not want early signing periods in the NCAA. That the recruits can sign in early February just like they always do. We don't need anything in December, and we certainly don't need anything the previous June. 13 other coaches disagree with him. We're going to talk about that with Bill Landis. And what's your thoughts and texts and tweets and Facebook comments on that, too, as we continue right here on The Ticket. By the way, speaking of college football, let me remind you about getting your gear at the College and Pro Superstore. It's the Buckeye Store and More in Sylvania at Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe, the Buckeye Store and More. It's right there between Ralphie's and Dave's in front of Promedico. Now, why do you want to go there? Because you love college sports, that's why. And whether it's Buckeye gear that you're looking for in scarlet and gray and with Buckeye leaves everywhere, or one of the other local teams that we cover so closely here on The Ticket and in Toledo, whether it's the Michigan Wolverines or Notre Dame Fighting Irish or Michigan State or the Rockets or the Falcons or even baseball's Tigers, you're going to find gear, hundreds of new products arriving each and every day, in fact, at the largest store in Ohio dedicated to Buckeye gear and more. A 10% store-wide savings going on right now, and you can take advantage of doorbuster items each and every day, saving 50 to 75% on select items. Look for Big Brutus on the roof. He'll be waving you in from 5700 Monroe in Sylvania, the Buckeye Store and More, the College and Pro Superstore. All right, coming up, Bill Landis will talk to us about recruiting in college sports and where that's headed right here on The Ticket.
once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Kind of an appropriate promo as we continue this afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader Urban Meyer, in addition to being on The Ticket, as you just heard, is also on the record as being the only Big Ten head coach to oppose, football coach that is, to oppose the early signing period for inevitable recruits, as they are being referred to. Interesting story today. Read it on ESPN.com. We'll link it up. In fact, it's already on our Twitter feed right now. Follow and check out the Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5. Last week, the NCAA Division I Council submitted a proposal to let prospects sign in late July and in mid-December, as well as on the early or the current signing day in early February. That proposal must be passed by the Board of Governors in January, then by a group that oversees the National Letter of Intent process. But at least now there is a concrete plan. Well, 13 out of 14 Big Ten head coaches expressed support for this program. The lone holdout is Urban Meyer. And joining us now to talk about it, covering the Ohio State Buckeyes for the Northeast Ohio Media Group and Cleveland.com, is Mr. Bill Landis. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for spending some time a little bit. It's interesting to talk about football in season, but be talking about off-season activities. There's plenty of time, obviously, to talk about recruiting in the downtime when games aren't being played. But this broke now, so here it is. I don't know how closely you followed it, but the argument goes by those who think it's a great idea that we can take the pressure off of these kids, let them sign their actual physical letters of intent early on so they can be students for the last year of their high school career, so they don't have to worry about any of the decommitting and somebody else pressuring them to switch before February gets here and all of those sorts of things that go on. Let's just let the kids who know exactly where they want to go make it official. Urban Meyer says no. What are your thoughts?
I think there's a lot of gray area in this. And when it first came out and I was thinking about it, I think I was pretty heavily in favor of it. And then I thought about it some more. And now I'm not 100% sure, because I think there's arguments to both sides. The argument you just laid out sort of in favor for it, that it takes the pressure off of kids who know for sure where they want to go, I think that's valid. But I think the counter argument to that might be, like, for an example, a kid who is committed to a program, thinks he wants to go there, isn't 100% sure just yet in July, and that program comes to him in July and says, hey, sign this letter. That kid says, I'm not so sure I want to sign that letter now. Well, then what does that school think? That school thinks that kid is going to hold out for something better or something different, or still exploring his options and isn't 100% dedicated to that program. So that program then pulls its offer, and then that kid's left with nothing. So I think there's pressure on both sides. There's a lot of gray area. I don't know what's wrong and what's right. It is interesting to me, though, that Urban Meyer is the only Big Ten head coach who's sort of out on that limb saying he's opposed to it. I thought there'd be more than that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Bill, because you're right. There are very solid arguments on both sides. And one of the arguments, and it's weird that only one coach is taking the other side. But this is a quote from Urban Meyer in discussing this. He said, young people have a right to choose where they want to go to school, period. Let them decommit 100 times. That's why they're called 17-year-olds. You're going to see more transfers and more mistakes made in recruiting than ever if they keep pushing this thing up. And there is some truth to that. You already have kids who kind of feel like maybe they made the wrong decision in February. If they realize, man, look at this, they just signed somebody else at my position that I wasn't aware of. Maybe they don't think as highly of me at that spot as I thought, and they wish they could get out of it. And now, bumping up by a period of months, it certainly, leaves it open to some second guessing.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with giving these players and these kids, because that's what they are, the most amount of time possible to make this very important decision. So I think I agree with that. The one thing I will say about Urban Meyer, and I don't think that his comments about it are disingenuous. I think he truly believes that the process has been sped up and this would make it even more so, and I agree with that. It is also to Ohio State's benefit that an early signing period doesn't exist, because I don't know if there's anyone in college football better than Urban Meyer at flipping kids late and getting in on it. Like, case in point, Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback they signed last year, was committed to Maryland forever. And Ohio State had recruited him, but he was committed to Maryland, and then all of a sudden in December it starts coming out, well, maybe Dwayne Haskins is going to come to Ohio State. And if there's an early signing period, that most likely doesn't happen, because Dwayne Haskins is signed with Maryland. So while I agree with most of what Urban Meyer says, and I agree that the process is sped up and this would make it even more so, it's also to Ohio State's benefit that this doesn't happen, because then Urban Meyer can continue to do what he's really good at, which is flipping guys late in the process.
That's a great point. We're talking to Bill Landers, who covers Ohio State for the Northeast Ohio Media Group, and we're talking about early recruiting, signing, not early recruiting, early signing periods for recruits. The NCAA has put forth, the Division I Council put forth a proposal to let prospects sign as early as late June and then mid-December, or one or the other. Not even sure if it would be one or two dates, and if those dates would be the firm ones, but this is what they have agreed upon that is the right idea. To your point, this is, and again, quoting from the ESPN article and a quote from Purdue's head coach, this is exactly what it's for, is so that schools like Maryland and other kind of lower-tier schools have a better opportunity to sign great, get great players early and to get them locked in. Daryl Hazel said, some teams can cherry-pick real late when they lose a guy. I think this will stop a lot of that cherry-picking and allow us to move on to the next guy. And it's true. If Urban Meyer doesn't get the one that they wanted because he signs with Michigan, he can go and take somebody that was already a verbal to a Purdue or to a, you know, to a Northwestern or to a Maryland or whatever and say, hey, we're here for you now. And bang, they do. They make that move. And, you know, those lower tier schools get left out in the cold.
Yeah. And that's a valid point, too, that Daryl Hazel and I'm sure a bunch of other coaches made. There's argument and there's counter argument with all of this. I would say that, well, it's not your decision, Daryl Hazel. Ultimately, it's the kid's decision. If that kid is committed to Purdue for 10 months and then decides, you know what, I think I can do better than Purdue, no offense to Purdue, then that kid should probably have the option to do that if he wants to. So if you're going to I think the idea of having a signing period in June is crazy. That's really early. That's before you're allowed to take official visits, and I think there's some stuff out there that they might push that up too. But it's before you take official visits. It's before you have SAT scores and ACT scores. There's a lot that happens after June that's important to the recruiting process. And I think I don't read the ESPN article, but if I remember correctly, listening to the Big Ten call yesterday, there were a few coaches who were in favor of it, but in favor of having it in December, when I think, your opinion is a little more, formed as an athlete. If you sign a letter in June, I think you're committing to a lot of unknown. And if you're signing a letter in December, I think you're a little more sure in that decision.
Well, the other thing you're doing if you sign a letter in December is your opinion is very cold, because here's another quote from the article discussing this from Minnesota's Tracy Clays. Quote, it gets a little chilly up here in Minneapolis in December and January, but we've had some pretty good success with kids who've come on unofficial visits in the summer. He said that would be huge. Mike Riley said in Lincoln the same thing. That would be huge for us. One of the key factors is getting guys into Lincoln under more ideal conditions. It's hard to bring somebody up and sell them on wanting to play up here when it's 20 below.
Yeah, that's a lot of Big Ten. Obviously Ohio State is Ohio State, but even in Columbus isn't the best place to be when you get into late November and December either. So I see that as a valid thing. And if they wanted to push up official visits, I think that's not a bad idea. I don't know if you should be having them in like the spring of your junior year or even in the summer in between, but if you want to start having them in August or late July so that a kid can get a feel for what a campus is like when it's not minus 30 and snowing, I guess that would be good for the Big Ten programs who have to battle that weather stuff.
More thoughts, Bill Landers, from Big Ten coaches on this whole thing. Kirk Ferentz said in-season visits, and I have to admit, I would imagine that they are. He said in-season visits are a total pain in the butt. And I think they really cheat the prospect out of a lot of important things on the visit. Our lives are already screwed up as coaches anyway, so what's a little more activity? In other words, these coaches are busy in season preparing their teams. You know, they're putting in 20-hour days. They're looking at film. They're having meetings. They're monitoring weight rooms. They're at practice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they really can't pay as much attention to the next generation of young players that they want here while giving the true total commitment that they need to the current players on the roster to prepare them to play to win that week. It is kind of something that I think it costs everybody a little bit of attention they need.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I never really understood like why official visits were such a heavily weighted thing. And I know you get to experience the game atmosphere, but I feel like, and just putting myself in the shoes of a recruit, I don't know how much like the actual game atmosphere would factor into my decision as much as like style of team, how I get along with the coach and the players on the team. And like, I feel you can't get a gauge for those relationships if you're visiting on a game weekend. Like Ohio State is going to go up to Michigan State here in a few weeks, and that's a huge visit weekend for Michigan State. But are those kids who are visiting actually going to get a feel for the relationship they can build with players and coaches on the team when that team is worried about beating Ohio State? So I think I agree with Kirk Ferentz that the in-season visit, is probably a little more for show than it is for actually getting stuff done on the recruiting ground. So if it was moved up to where you're not having, you're not playing games, and you can actually spend time with those kids and get to know them and actually sell them in your program, that's probably a good thing.
You know, it's a really good point, but again, like almost all of these points, there's just no, there's no clear-cut
right
or wrong, and here's what I mean by that. I can also see the lure of that game day atmosphere and wanting to experience it, because just from my TV screen, I've got a 13-year-old 8th-grade football player in my house, and we watched last year, and Cushland, Jim Cushland, you'll appreciate this because you went to Virginia Tech, but when they had the season opener against Virginia Tech, and it was on TV, that Virginia Tech stadium and that ceremony or whatever it is that you want to call it, that the Hokies entered the field was literally, you know, it was chill-inducing. It's one of those things where you get the, if you're a football fan anyway, and I'm not a football fan of the Hokies, but I was just like in awe of how cool that was. That it was goosebump-inducing. And then to this year, watching the primetimer 2 weeks ago between Louisville and Clemson, the way Clemson, you know, they ride the bus to the top of the hill, and then they go down that hill into the stadium with the, you know, the explosions going on around them. There's something about that game experience. I looked over at my 13-year-old son as we watched that start of the Clemson-Louisville game. I said, how'd you like to be a part of that? And he just, you know, he had the same kind of stars in his eyes at 13 as I probably did it in my 40s. Because it's just really, really cool. And it makes you think, man, that would be awesome to be a part of. Now magnify that times 1,000 by putting the kid right there in the stadium as it happens. And you get an assistant coach or somebody to whisper over to them, how'd you like to be wearing one of those helmets right now? How'd you like to be running down that hill right now into the valley? You know, that's just the kind of thing that I think can swing a guy.
Yeah, it's certainly, I mean, I've been in stadiums before, clearly. I was at that Virginia Tech game last year. I was at Oklahoma this year. Been in Ohio Stadium plenty of times, Beaver Stadium at Penn State, and then Ohio State's playing at one this weekend at Camp Randall, where you just have awesome college football environments. Maybe I was wrong, but
no, I don't think you were. I wasn't trying to say you're wrong. No, Bill, please don't misunderstand. I'm just throwing the other side because I think you're also very, very right. When a game is going on and game preparation is going on, that head coach can't take a lot of time to talk about his relationship with the recruit and about where he sees him in their future scheme, et cetera, et cetera. You're right about that. They're focused on winning a game right now. I was just providing the flip side to it. The game itself can sell a kid maybe even more than a coach can. If they're in that kind of an unbelievable atmosphere,
right? Yeah, and I agree with that. And I don't think the game atmosphere is unimportant. Certainly, it can only help you. It's not gonna hurt you ever. But I also think that it's possible to sell kids on everything you need to sell them on, even if they're visiting when you're not playing a game. Obviously, the game enhances things and gives you a boost. But if you're doing it right and you're a good recruiter and you have a good university, I think all that stuff can sell itself. When you're not hosting an official visit on a Saturday game day.
Yeah, one more thought from one more coach, Bill, and get your thoughts on from the Big Ten perspective. Pat Fitzgerald of Northwestern said many decommitments happen because prospects commit before they're ever able to take an official visit and learn about the school. He said it's also no secret that a large percentage of the top recruits live in areas outside the Big Ten's geographic footprint. It would be easier to pay to fly them and their parents to campus before they get busy with their own high school seasons. And so if you're able to do that with an earlier signing day, you can get them in there before their own seasons begin, and you can spend more time with them. And if they really like what they see, go ahead and sign right on the spot.
Yeah, that's another valid point. And I think that's something people forget about when they think about these kids visiting, is that any visit that's not an official visit has to come out of the pocket of the parents of the kid. But the official visit, that's when the schools can pay for everything and give them the five-star treatment and treat them well and sort of roll out the red carpet. So, yeah, I think if you can do that earlier, obviously, that's to your benefit as well.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing, too, that you have to consider, and I think they, as long as they're in the process or at least on the they have their ambition to fix the recruiting process or to improve it. They've got to figure out what to do with kids who are recruited by a coach who ends up getting fired before they ever get to campus. Mm-hmm. They've got to give those kids an opportunity, because you might say, hey, they were committing to Ohio State University. They were committing to University of Michigan, not to Urban Meyer or Jim Harbaugh, but in truth, they are. they're being sold by a coach, they're being sold by a staff on what their future is and what they see and they envision their place being in that program, you know, as sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And when that guy goes, now that place is completely lost because the new coach may have a very, very different vision for the kind of player he wants. They've got to find a way to let kids get out of those things and decommit after a coach leaves.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And that's where I think that the June signing period is most problematic. And I'm interested to see the December one, like what the date would be, if it would be maybe a week or so after sort of the traditional time where we see coaches get fired a week or two after the season. Cause I think you can still have one in December, even with that sort of lingering out there, as long as it was late enough in December. But the one in June, unless the NCAA is willing to give kids a complete release from those letters anytime a coach gets fired, I think you're opening a can of worms. I'm not so sure the NCAA wants to open.
What if they just limited it to a handful? You know, not everybody, but hey, you know, every team can, if they choose, make 5 early letter of intent offers, and 5 kids can accept in June, and say another 5 in December, and the balance has to be filled out by, you know, or can be filled out as early as that first Tuesday or whatever it is in February. That way, you know, not everything is settled, but you can make sure they get the kids who really are. And I think the word they're using is inevitable. There's no doubt. They're not decommitting. They love where they're going. The school that is recruiting them loves them. Let's just get them locked in right now.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting. I don't know. I don't know if that's your idea you came up with yourself. That's a good idea. I haven't read that anywhere.
No, I'm not that smart. I'm not that smart. I'm stealing that from ESPN.com and Brian Bennett,
okay,
who wrote it. And in fact, I don't even know if he wrote it. I think it is something they're discussing, actually. So it's just kind of one of those things that are out there in the ether. Hey, look at the many different possible ways we could do this. How about we do just a few of them and so on. So I think that might be, again, I don't think there's any perfect answer, but if you're looking for some sort of, boy, I'm having a hard time with my vocabulary today. What is something in the middle? If you're looking for the in between two things, you know what I'm trying to say? If you're looking for that middle ground, and I don't know why I can't figure out what my words are today, but that could be it. That could be your answer to give everybody a little bit of what they want. You still have the bulk of the decisions being made in February, or actual signatures being made in February, but you can get some of your early lock-in guys done, and then and then maybe everybody gets the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I think that sounds like actually, of all the things I've heard, that sounds like actually pretty feasible plan.
It'll be interesting to see how they work it out because, again, this is just the Big Ten. I would imagine these 14 coaches that were, you know, talking about this and talking with ESPN for this story, the same thing is happening in every other conference, and there are probably a variety of opinions, probably a lot of people pro, a lot of people con, so it's still many, many months away from ever being, you know, coming to fruition, but it is a very interesting possibility, I suppose. Bill, really appreciate you kicking the idea around with us. What are your thoughts on the Buckeyes in Wisconsin? Wisconsin, obviously, not what maybe people thought they would be this season. Any struggle for the Buckeyes going into Camp Randall?
I have questions about Ohio State's throwing game. I know it wasn't great against Indiana, and there were some wins involved. I think for JT Barrett, as good as he's been this year, and maybe you can tell me if you think differently, but I think JT just seems like a little off in his throwing a little bit, and I think that if he's not accurate and he's not completing passes against a good Wisconsin defense, I think being one-dimensional becomes a problem when you're playing a defense that good. So I want to see if Ohio State can throw the ball.
I get that a little bit, especially in the last game against Indiana. But obviously, he made up for it with his feet. But I think there's a little bit to that, and I think more than him being off, it's just more of him getting on the same page with a new fleet of receivers. You know, whether it's finding Noah Brown the way he did for a touchdown festival against Oklahoma, or some of the other guys. I just think there's a period of time in the first half of a season where you got a bunch of guys who had not started before starting for the first time. That's going to maybe hold things back a little bit. It's not going to be as fluid in October as it will be, you know, in November, and certainly if you were fortunate enough to make it to the playoff come January.
Yeah, and I don't think there was a lot of, I think, maybe unnecessary doom and gloom kind of stuff going on after the Indiana game. They didn't play great offensively. They still won by 3 touchdowns. I think Ohio State's probably going to win this game because I don't think Wisconsin has the offense to keep up with it. But I think it's a good test to see truly where Ohio State's offense is, because this is the best defense we'll see all year.
No question about it. No question. Good stuff. Hey, Bill, thanks so much for the time and the analysis. We appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
All right. You got it. There you go. Bill Landis joining us to talk about Big Ten football recruiting style. By the way, when I said Wisconsin, maybe not as, you know, as good as people thought they would be, they are still ranked 8th. I guess I'm looking at their offense and how Michigan was able to hold them down 2 weeks ago. And Michigan did. It was a 14-7 win, obviously, for the Wolverines. It was a showdown. But then again, the week after there, before that, they had just hammered Michigan State 30-6. So perhaps it's a little bit inaccurate to say Wisconsin is not as good as a lot of people thought. This is a team that is 4-1, and it's only that Michigan lost, staining their record right now. So this should still be a pretty big challenge, especially that defense that Bill just referenced when they get to Camp Randall on Saturday. Hey, before we take a break here at the top of the hour, the high school, the KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. We got to give some credit to the girls, for the girls. And Jim, I know you didn't really do this to me on purpose, right? You're going to pronounce this name for me?
I am going to attempt to myself. Let's see. Okay.
You didn't practice this yet? You're going to send me this name and say, Bob, here's our high school athletes of the week. And one of them is very easy. It's Lily Rinker. And then you're going to give me this other girl's name, and you didn't even practice it? You should have called the school and gotten the pronunciation, because it is out there. I will do my, and when I say that with no disrespect.
It's no, just, not at
it's
all.
Just, please understand, it's a lot of consonants, not a lot of vowels. So I'm going to try it here. Pippa Yar, I'm going to make the T silent. Yarizgit. Pippa's Yarizgit is the best I think I can do with that. And God bless her and her family. And congratulations to her and to Lily Rinker. They both are golfers for St. Urthula. Pina shot a 76, Lily a 77. Good for second and third in terms of the individual rounds, as the Arrows won the Division I District Tournament at Stone Ridge on Tuesday. Congratulations to them. Next up is a trip to the Ohio State Great Course for the state tournament this coming weekend. For the boys, St. John's Soccer senior Zach Busher. Zach scored a hat trick to account for all the Titan goals in a 3-1 win against Finley, which won won St. John's the track title outright. They're now 11-2-2 overall in the season, finishing a perfect 7-0 in track play. Congratulations to the boys and the girls named this week's KeyBank High School Athletes of the Week. If you have an athlete you would like to nominate for the award, by the way, send your nomination to
athlete@1065ticket.com,
and we will consider them for the honor. All right, coming up next, we are going to shift gears and get into some NBA talk. We have our Aaron McMahon is going to join us, talk a little bit about the injury to Reggie Jackson, see how long it's going to keep him out and see how much it's going to hold him back at the start of the NBA season. Then at 4:40 this afternoon, back to college football, this time talking about a game. The I-75 rivalry is renewed coming up on Saturday, and UT head coach Jason Candle will join us coming up at 4:40 right here on the Ticket.
Giants lead the Cubs 5-2. They are three outs away from sending this series back to Wrigley Field. The 2-1 and a fastball swung on and grounded past a diving Crawford in the left field. A base hit for Bryant. And the Cubs have the leadoff man aboard here in the ninth inning. And Bruce Bochy is out of the dugout already, and he wants the left-hander Lopez. And they're on their feet waving their towels around again here at AT&T Park. Lopez looking for an all-important out. 3-2. Outside ball four. Rizzo will draw the walk, and the tying run will indeed come to the plate. Sergio Romo, the closer, the guy who gave up the Chris Bryant home run last night. He sets, steals, and a swing and a ball hit down the right field line. A fair ball, and it's going to get all the way down into the corner. Bryant is in to score. Rizzo held at third on an RBI double by Zobrist, and it's 5-3. And he does make the move now for the left-hander, Will Smith. This ballpark is so quiet right now. They are so nervous here in San Francisco. The 1-1 to Contreras, a swing and a ground ball, and it's going to sneak through into center field, a base hit. A bouncer up the middle will score two, and Wilson Contreras has tied the game here in the ninth inning. And the Cubs have scored three runs. Hayward shows bunt, gets it down, but hard back to the mound. To second, one on to first, a wide throw by Crawford goes out of play. And Hayward will take second. Could have had two there. Instead, they get one. A stunning turn of events, to say the least, here in the ninth inning, as the Cubs have scored three runs to tie it. Now Strickland. Here's the 0-2. And a swing and a ground ball. Base hit up the middle into center. Hayward around third. He will come in to score. Javier Baez with an RBI single has given the Cubs a 6-5 lead. Chapman trying to send the Cubs on to the next round. The set, the pitch, and a swing and a miss. He got him. Aroldis Chapman strikes out the side in the ninth, and the Chicago Cubs are moving on to the National League Championship Series.
You know, myself, I just told myself, get on base and anything can happen. And Riz worked an unbelievable at bat, taking a walk. And then Zobris, obviously, working a hitter's count. And then getting runs on second and third, and anything can happen there. And Wilson coming up huge off the bench off a tough lefty. And then Javi coming up huge. I mean, the best win I've ever been a part of.
I thought the first game of the series was the best game I've ever been a part of, but this one has to top it. Come back like we did was amazing. In the ninth inning there, did very well, packed it in, relied on Lester for game five, but we don't quit. We never quit all year, and this is amazing, and the boys are enjoying it.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward into hour number two. We roll right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo sports leader. Phone lines 866-240-1065, but not really available at the moment because we need to shift gears a little bit and go from the end of the baseball season, and it literally was for the San Francisco Giants last night, and baseball, of course, being in its playoffs, getting ready to wrap up. The NBA is just on the flip side. They are just getting started out, and it's time to talk a little NBA preseason action, Piston style, with our friend Aaron McMahon, who covers the Pistons for MLive.com. Aaron, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, Bob. Good to be with you.
Good to have you back. I certainly appreciate you spending a little time talking Pistons with us, especially since we found out about Reggie Jackson. Going to miss, what, 6 to 8 weeks was the prognosis. He had a medical procedure, surgery done. What's the status? What can you tell us?
Yeah, he's on crutches right now. He came back with the team yesterday. He had his plasma injection therapy Monday morning in New York City. All signs were that was successful. He's expected to be on crutches here for another week. After that, he's going to be off his feet for another 2 to 3, and then he should be cleared for basketball activity. The Pistons are right now conservatively gunning for a early December return.
Now, in addition to the knee injury and the surgery, he's got a thumb problem too. Is that serious?
That is correct. I don't think it's that serious. It was something he played through most of last season. It was bothering him for a while. It was one of those things where he was getting the plasma injection to his knee, so he figured, well, I'll get the thumb too. So I don't think it was a major thing. He said he could have played through it, and he did last year. So I don't think that was anything major.
He probably looked like he just got off a battlefield. He's walking on crutches. He's got a glove on his hand, and he's probably, I would imagine, hearing it a little bit from his teammates. Not that they're happy, obviously, that he's got to go through these things, but I would imagine that's not exactly a common sight for those guys. What's his attitude like now as he realizes he's going to be sidelined until into December?
Yeah, no, he's an upbeat guy, and he seems rather upbeat. Now, he did say yesterday that Monday was the happiest day he had in about a week, and I think that was more or less just him, deciding on what procedure he wanted to take, and that kind of depended on his return. From my understanding, this plasma injection therapy, which is a procedure he had in 2011 when he was in Oklahoma City, would take the longest to recover from, but it also, I think, was the best option for him in terms of long-term viability. So he seems rather upbeat. He knows what he needs to do. He's been through this before. He kept saying several times yesterday that he's ready to get back on the court, and I know the Pistons want him back too.
We are talking with Aaron McMahon of MLive.com. He covers the Detroit Pistons. Bob France with you as always. Jim Cushnell alongside as well. Cush, go ahead.
And obviously, Aaron, this means if the timetable is Reggie Jackson not back till December, it means Ish Smith, who was picked up in this offseason for the Pistons, he's going to end up having to be the starting point guard, at least for obviously this first month of the season. And then, honestly, even I'm not sure bench-wise for backup point guard. So walk us through that part of the depth chart at this point. How does that shake out?
Sure. It's just a guy that started 50 games in Philadelphia last year. He's a capable starter. With him, though, it's more or less trying to figure the offense out now. The Pistons were so heavily relying on the pick and roll with Jackson and Andre Drummond. They got to change things up a little bit, in terms of speed and acclimation. Smith's more of a playmaker. He likes to penetrate the lane and distribute. So the Pistons are starting to gel. They're learning to gel with him right now. It's been a process so far through the first two games. I would expect it to linger on in the beginning of the season. He's a good, like I said, he's a good distributor. I think he'll be okay once he gets his bearings and the team gets to know him. Beyond him, it's a question mark at this point. The Pistons had a training camp battle coming in for the third point guard spot between Ray McCallum, a former star at the University of Detroit Mercy, And Lorenzo Brown, a guy who was with the Pistons at the end of last season, he's familiar with the team and the coaching staff. Right now, those two are battling out for the backup point guard spot. Through two games, they each got their own game, I guess, so to speak, in the preseason. Ray played the first game, Lorenzo played the second. I thought Lorenzo looked a little bit better, his stature a little bit better. But both, I think, are going to get an opportunity this week in Atlanta and Philadelphia. After that, the Pistons have a decision to make.
All right. Aaron McManus is our guest. Aaron is covering the Detroit Pistons for MLive.com right here on the ticket, joining us to discuss. Now, as we scan around MLive.com this afternoon in preparation for your visit, of course, we came across McMahon's bold predictions. You've laid it out here, 8 bold predictions for the Detroit Pistons 2016-2017 season. Let's get into them a little bit and see what your thinking is on some of these, including number one, that the Pistons, who started out on fire last year at 5-1, not so this time around. You predict they're going to be winless after 3 games. What's going on?
Yeah, no, that kind of goes back to what I was talking about with you know, the acclimation with Ish Smith. I think it's going to take a little bit. You know, they opened in Toronto. A team who, you know, hasn't changed a whole lot from last season. I mean, they'll probably be in the thick of things with the when it comes to playoffs. So I think they have some trouble in Toronto. I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of spills over into the first week of the season. You know, like I said, the Pistons are still learning the offense with Ish. They're getting acclimated. I think it's going to take some time. So I would not be surprised to see them come out that first week winless after they started last season 5-1.
So negative, so pessimistic, such a spoil sport. No, I'm kidding, of course. Bold prediction number 2 from Aaron McMahon, Pistons beat writer for MLive.com. That is not number 2. Number 2 was KCP. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is going to be a restricted free agent. They're not going to sign him to his rookie extension before October 31st. How come?
Yeah, and I think that's more in KCP's court. You know, the Pistons have offered him a number. We don't know what that number is at this point. Mm-hmm. And the ball's in his agent, Rich Paul's court. You know, there's going to be the salary cap is set to rise again next season. Pope can, in theory, make upwards of $20 million a year. If he doesn't get in Detroit, he might get it elsewhere. So I think, you know, Pope's going to let this ride out. He's going to let it play through the season. I would be willing to wager that Pope is back next season. Obviously, with him being a restricted free agent, the Pistons have the option to match any contract that is offered to him. If the Pistons don't feel like they can find anybody to fill his shoes in next offseason, then he's an obvious choice. Pistons team owner Tom Gores has already said he's willing to go into the luxury tax to re-sign him. So the offer is there, and it's up to him at this point. I would not be surprised if he kind of goes into this season as I looking to explore the market next offseason.
Aaron McMahon's 8 bold predictions for the Pistons 2016-2017 season. We're going to skip over the next one because it had to do with Reggie Jackson and his return, which you've already covered in great depth with our first questions. Let's skip over to Andre Drummond, who is going to build on his breakout season a year ago in which he led the NBA in rebounding. Andre Drummond will be an all-star starter. How come?
I think he's going to get more touches offensively. You know, the Pistons with Jackson out and Smith kind of distributing. You know, they're looking at other options. They realize, you know, Tobias Harris and Marcus Morris need to pick up the slack on the wing. Through the first 2 preseason games, they've really made a concerted effort to get Drummond active on the post. I expect him to get more points, more touches. Probably, you know, increases his points per game average. I don't see his rebounding numbers going down anytime soon, so I think all-star bid is pretty good for him as long as he doesn't get injured.
Yeah, and that's the key, of course, staying healthy, no doubt about it. Aaron McMahon's 8 bold predictions for the Pistons in the upcoming season. Jim Cushman, go ahead.
And your next one, Aaron, and I'm wondering and thinking your answer might have something to do with Reggie Jackson not being here for the first month. 45 wins and the playoffs. Barely.
Yeah, you know, if you would ask me this question about a week ago before the Reggie, injury kind of came to light, you know, I was thinking, you know, anywhere between 48, maybe upwards of 50 wins, and this team is, you know, on the cusp of hosting a first round playoff series. Now with Jackson out, I think it's going to take them some time to, like I mentioned, you know, get gelled, get acclimated. I think they get in the playoffs, but it won't be where I think most Pistons fans were hoping.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's expand upon this one just a little bit. 45 wins and barely. Are we talking 8 seed, or do you think that would be high enough? And I know you mentioned possibly the 6 seed. You don't have to play Cleveland again in round one.
No, I don't think that's ideal. You know, this is a team that not only want to get in the playoffs, but they really want to win a series. In fact, immediately they said the overarching goal is to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that might be a bit of a stretch now at this point. However, you know, they want to get in there. They want to win a series. I think the 6th and 7th seed right now are probably safe options. You know, do they get Reggie back earlier than they expect, or maybe they get more production out of Smith early on and win some, you know, and float through that first half okay? Maybe they get that 4th or 5th seed that some people were hoping for. But right now I guess I gotta be pessimistic and wait and see how this, Ish plays into the offense.
Next prediction for Aaron McMahon for the 2016-17 Detroit Pistons here in the preseason. Defense, already greatly improved a year ago, up to 12th in the NBA. You think Stan Van can get his team into the top 10?
I think they can. You know, they've got 7 of their 9 rotation guys back. They understand they need to get better. They came into training camp with that understanding. But so the mental aspect is there. And the fact that they have another season kind of having played together and gelled together, I think helps. You know, when you're familiar with a guy and what their tendencies are on the defensive end, it makes your job easier. And I think that they've added some size too down low with John Lure. So I do think they make a jump. You know, I don't know if it's going to be maybe top 8, but I could see them definitely finishing top 9 and 10, this season.
Jim Kirsten, take the next prediction.
All right, the next prediction, and this is going to be kind of one that I think will definitely benefit the Pistons, especially in this first month when they're going to be a little shorthanded in the backcourt. Banner season for John Lure. We didn't see many bench guys have banner seasons a year ago. You're calling for one right here.
Yeah, you know, I think he was probably the most significant offseason signing for this Pistons team. You know, Lure brings a good size and versatility with him. He's a tall forward. He can stretch the floor. He can shoot from the perimeter, which I think is what Lure learned John Lure in the offseason. You know, he can bring defenders out on him, which kind of opens things up offensively for them. And he brings that shot and that scoring aspect, like Jim said, that they didn't really have last year. You know, they struggled with Steve Blake at point guard, and Stanley Johnson struggled at times. So their offensive production from the bench really came from Aaron Baines and then some from Stanley Johnson when they got it. But other than that, they didn't have a whole lot of options. So I think Lure gives them that consistent option off the bench. He's an all around player. They seem to like him. And so he's braced for a big season.
All right, and here's the last one, the 8th bold prediction of the 8 bold predictions by Aaron McMahon of MLive.com about the Detroit Pistons. Andre Drummond, the guy that you say is not only going to make the All-Star team again, but is going to be an All-Star starter, is going to shoot 38% from the foul line. First of all, after we take our jaws off the ground just about how horrible that is, and just the idea that it could be that bad again. And last year, what was it last year, like 35, somewhere in that neighborhood?
Yep, 35 and a half.
35 and a half. Okay, aside from just, you know, again, marveling at how horribly inept that is, how do you come up with the very specific percentage of 38 as opposed to 37 or 39 or 34 or 31?
That's a good question. I was looking at his career average actually last night when I was putting that together, and it's around 38%. I expect him to be just about, you know, where he was last season. I think the difference last season was he shot more free throws by volume than he ever had before, because teams were, you know, intentionally fouling him, you know, during the second half of games, during the second quarter in games. I think you're still going to see that some this year, but I don't think you can see as much with the NBA's new intentional foul rule where teams are no longer allowed to do it in the final 2 minutes of every quarter. So that in essence eliminates 8 minutes from where you can intentionally foul a guy like Drummond or DeAndre Jordan or Dwight Howard. So I think his volume just creeps down a little bit, and I think that allows his free throw shooting to kind of, I guess, if you would say, you know, perk up from last year. The Pistons made an interesting, decision in the offseason. He's been working on this virtual reality to kind of help him with his mindset of shooting free throws. What he basically does is he puts on a pair of goggles and watches tape of himself in the gym just shooting free throws where he made them. So I guess it reinforces his the mental aspect where he can make free throws. I don't see that working a whole lot. Maybe it will. I don't know. Right. It's so far after two preseason games, he's 2 for 6. So I would expect that, you know, his free throw, his average won't jump up much.
Tell me more about what he did in this offseason. Because, I mean, that's a big thing. You know, last year at the end of the year, everybody talked about, is he going to, would he be willing to think about underhand the way Rick Barry has suggested to teach him, you know, which guys have done in the past. It's embarrassing, but it has worked for people in the past in extreme circumstances. He's not doing that, obviously, but what exactly has he done to try to get, you know, more consistent at this? We know he's serious. We know he's not just being lazy and saying, ah, hell, I don't care. You know, I don't need those. As long as I can rebound and dunk, who cares if I miss free throws? We know he actually takes this very seriously, and it's important to him. But what's he do? What has he done in the offseason?
No, absolutely, and that goes back to the virtual reality thing I kind of talked about. You know, the whole underhanded thing was brought up to him. I know it's been brought up to him several times now. I get the impression he doesn't want to do it, and I understand his reasoning. You know, whether it's, you know, he's embarrassed or he just doesn't feel comfortable doing it. It's like you said, it's something he's worked on. You know, we'll walk in the gym after practice, and he'll be working on it. It's Dan McGundy. Swears he makes 60-65% of them in practice. And I would say he makes more than he misses from what I've seen. But then he gets out on the court, and I think it becomes a mental issue for him, you know, with the fans in the crowd and the hecklers yelling at him and, you know, maybe having played, running, you know, having run up and down the court, played extended minutes, he's tired. So I think it's a lot of those things factored in. He's worked on, you know, they brought in a shooting coach last year. They worked with him, they called it a shooting, sleeve last year to kind of correct his form. And then, like I said, he's been using that virtual reality, over the summer to try and, you know, reiterate his that he can make free throws.
Sure.
So they've tried things, they've used technology, they've done everything that I think the Pistons really can do at this point, you know, aside from attempting the underhanded free throws. So I think they're going to give this a try, see how he does this year. And, you know, if things don't improve, maybe they can finally convince him to do the underhanded approach. But I don't see that happening.
And last thing before we let you run, Aaron McMahon joins us from MLive.com. A little preview of the Pistons, especially in light of Reggie Jackson having surgery. He's going to be out till early December at the very earliest that he could come back. What do you see happening in the Eastern Conference? Is there anybody who can challenge the defending champions? The Knicks obviously have been rebuilt and remodeled and have a new coach. Chicago has a totally different look because of the switch to the Knicks for Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah. The Heat are not going to be the same. Chris Bosh is gone. Toronto made it to the conference finals last year as well. Who's the threat, or is there no threat to the Cavaliers' supremacy in the Eastern Conference?
You know, that's a good question. I would say right now I have the Cavs, you know, repeating as Eastern Conference champions. However, I'm really high on Boston and Indiana. You know, their offseason moves. Al Horford and then Indiana landing Jeff Teague. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the moves they made. I think if anybody's going to compete, it's going to be those two teams. And I don't see Toronto having the year they did last year. I think they caught some teams by surprise. They didn't do much to get better in the offseason. Could they land, you know, a number four seed? Absolutely, and host a first round playoff series. But I think, as it stands right now, I think Cleveland and then 2 and 3 are either Boston or Indiana.
All right, good stuff. Great analysis from Aaron McMahon of MLive.com. Keep reading him on that website. Follow him on Twitter. Aaron, really appreciate the time. Great analysis. We always enjoyed a long season in front of us. I hope we can talk on a regular basis.
Absolutely, Bob. Thank you so
much, Aaron. Great stuff. There he is, Aaron McMahon, with his thought on the Pistons. Andre Drummond, he says, is going to shoot 38%. He's got it down to the number. He shot 35% last year, 38% the year before, 41 in the 2013-2014 season, 37 in his rookie season. So he's gone progressively down over the last 3 years, 41 to 38 to 35. He says it goes back up to 38 this time around. It'll be wonderful for the Pistons if he could crack 40 again and at least give them a, you know, a 4-in-10 chance, obviously, of making these, especially in clutch situations. He's right, though. The new rule regarding intentional fouling will cut down on the volume of his attempts, so we'll see exactly where that goes. All right, so good stuff from Aaron McMahon. We're going to shift gears coming up here in just a few minutes as we talk about college football with the I-75 rivalry being renewed at the Glass Bowl. It's going to be on Saturday, Bowling Green at Toledo. We're going to talk to Jason Candle. Obviously, we had Mike Jinks on yesterday from BG. But before we do any of that, let me remind you about the College Football National Championship Flyaway, an opportunity for you to attend the College Football National Championship game. It's January 9 in Tampa, and up for grabs, a trip for two to Tampa, round-trip airfare, four-night hotel stay, two upper-level tickets to the game, and rental car with parking, all covered, as well as, and you might like this best of all, depending on your taste. If you love beer, you're going to love the tour of the Yuengling Brewery in Tampa. That's a $5,000 prize package. Runner-up prize, if you don't win that, is a trip for two to the Michigan-Ohio State game, November 26th in Columbus, with limo service. And third place is a prize pack from Yuengling. To qualify for this outstanding opportunity, register online at 1065theticket.com. You can register up to once per day, or you can qualify right now by being the eighth caller to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. We will qualify you for that outstanding prize package. Good luck from Yuengling Lager. Yark Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, Country Hearth Fireplaces and Stoves, Allegiant Air at Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Image Limousine, and, of course, Toledo's ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. All right, so that's one thing. And while I've got Jim Kushlin busy over there answering phones for the flyaway, how about we make him really busy and I hook you up with a pair of tickets, caller number 9. All right, since caller number 8 is qualifying for that prize, caller number 9 is going to get a pair of passes to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont. It is the place to be for Halloween fun and scares and thrills, delights for all ages. Haunted Hydro in Fremont. A pair of tickets are yours if you are the ninth caller at 866-240-1065. All right, going to take that time out now, get a bottom of the hour sports center. Then we're going to talk a little college football with Coach Jason Candle. He'll sit down with Mr. Kushlin next, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Kushlin here hanging out with you. Time to cycle through all our wonderful college football we have in the area. The Toledo Rockets, they were a winner last week at Eastern Michigan, 35-20. And it's Battle of I-75 week as they'll be at the Glass Bowl Saturday afternoon against Bowling Green Falcons. And help us talk all things Rocket football, we turn now to the head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle. Hi, Coach. Thanks again for joining us. How are you?
Having me on. How are you?
Not too bad, and you guys are doing pretty good, 4-1 after the 35-20 win, but kind of as we talked about last week, Coach, these essentially are not your older brother's Eastern Michigan squad. This was a tough game despite ending up winning by 15. It felt a lot closer than that throughout. In fact, a scoreless first quarter, and it was only 7-3 at half.
Yeah, they're a much improved football team. You know, I think give them a lot of credit, you know, of getting their team ready to go and coming out and playing a spirited game and, you know, giving us all we could handle there for a little bit. You know, but you're right. I think you hit on the point of, I think a lot of teams at Eastern, you know, in the past would have laid down once we got up a couple scores, but this team certainly didn't. They kept fighting all the way to the end, and testament to Coach Creighton and his staff for doing such a great job.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you guys, especially defensively, had your work cut out for you earlier in this game before some of the scoring started to happen. Talk to me about the, because we always like to give the props to your defense too, Coach. Talk to me about the defensive effort, especially in the first half, to keep that game scoreless as long as it was.
Yeah, they did an outstanding job. We were going to start out on defense regardless of whether what happened with the toss, the coin toss, and, you know, we didn't win the coin toss, but we ended up having to go out there, you know, and play some defense in the first quarter there early, and certainly had to, you know, do a great job of getting some early stops, and, you know, I thought those guys did an excellent job of getting off the field on third down, which we didn't do a great job of 2 weeks ago out at BYU. So, you know, coming off of a long trip and a stressful, long football game, that, you know, just emotionally a draining game at BYU, to come back and a defense that wanted to get out there first and wanted to get out there and show, you know, that the previous week wasn't exactly what was in our DNA. So we, you know, I was proud of our guys, their effort of trying to come out and start fast defensively, and they certainly did, and we needed them because we weren't quite hitting on all cylinders offensively.
Yeah, it took a little while offensively, Coach, for it to get together. Eventually, midway through the second, you got a Logan Woodside touchdown pass in there. Eastern would counter with a field goal right before the break, then get a field goal on their first drive out. Talk to me then about that first drive of the third quarter in what at this point is now a 7-6 ball game.
Well, I thought it was important to go down and get a couple scores into the wind in the third quarter there, because, you know, I thought we'd have it at our back in the fourth quarter and be able to play a little more aggressively offensively in that quarter. But, you know, we hit able to actually hit a big pass into the wind, which is kind of, you know, wasn't really what I planned, but a great ball by Logan and a great route by Cody to get things going. And then, you know, right after that on the kickoff, we were able to get a turnover that really sparked us. Great job by Marcus to hustling down and jumping on that ball. So, you know, got up two scores there and, you know, we're able to, like I said, hold off a team that kept battling to the end, like you said.
Yeah, and then after that turnover, the next touchdown at this point to put you guys up 21-6. Kareem Hunt, another outstanding day at the office for him. 29 carries, buck 41, and a touchdown. He's so valuable to what you guys try to do.
He is, you know, a very selfless, you know, selfless team guy, a guy that's totally, you know, a program guy. And when you're in your best player, they're like that. You know, you really give yourself a chance because, you know, we've thrown the ball really well the first few weeks, and, you know, we've had some really high statistics, you know, passing the football. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people, the guys in the backfield can get frustrated, you know, that way, but that certainly has not been Kareem. And Kareem's always been about one goal and one goal only, competing for a MAC championship. And, you know, he's been consistent each and every week, and he knows that what he has to give us and provide for us week in and week out, and he's just keeps answering the bell.
We're talking with head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, here on the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here with you. Then later on in the fourth, coach, after another Logan Woodside touchdown pass, you go up a couple more scores. Eastern comes right back, makes it an 8-point game. What are you telling your offense and defense at this point? You're midway through the fourth quarter, and Eastern's still hanging around like that.
Well, I think we had to go throw a knockout punch on offense. We had to drive the ball the length of the field. We had to take up as much clock as we could and score. You know, obviously finish drives with touchdowns, not settle for field goals. And really proud of our offense. We kind of relied on that big offensive line, you know, veteran guys up there, and Kareem and Corey Jones, some veteran players that have played around here for a long time, to, you know, get us in position to get down there and get that last score. And Corey came up with a great catch on the last play to, you know, to get us up, you know, put us up a couple scores.
Now, you talked about this a couple of minutes ago. You brought up, I want you to expand on it if you could, coach. You know, you're talking, this is a team where you guys expended a lot of mental and physical energy a couple weeks ago in that crazy shootout game at BYU. You come back, it's first game of MAC play, and you have to hold off this type of team. How is that making the guys feel mentally at this point?
Well, I think we're back into a week-to-week routine now. You know, we're not Friday night and then the following Saturday clear across the country flight, you know, changing time zones and all that. You know, they're onto a schedule. You know, obviously we have a tremendous opponent coming in this week, and, you know, this game is, you know, it means a lot to Northwest Ohio and to the city of Toledo. So, you know, I know our guys are focused. Our team is ready to play this weekend, and, you know, we're looking forward to a great game.
I said before once in an interview with you, coach, that you are already a pro at this. Fantastic segue, because it is the Battle of I-75 coming up on Saturday afternoon, 3:30, the kickoff at the Glass Bowl, Toledo Bowling Green. And clearly, coach, this is one of those situations where you guys are having the start to the season that you're having, 4-1 now. Get that first win in MAC play. Bowling Green is clearly struggling right now, mightily in some cases, but you could throw all that stuff out the window for one of these crazy rivalry games, even the part where you guys have won six in a row in this rivalry.
Well, I understand the magnitude of the rivalry. I understand what this means to our city and to, you know, to Northwest Ohio, and to our guys in our locker room, and certainly their players as well. But I do totally believe and trust that, you know, the best football team that plays the best on Saturday is going to win the game. And that's, you know, true in any game, you know, not alone just, you know, Bowling Green Toledo or Ohio State Michigan. You know, that in college football, there's so much parity that if you don't bring your A game each and every week, you can really honestly get embarrassed. And, you know, I think that we have to be ready to play. You know, we know we expect their best, you know, and I think the team that you're seeing from them the last few weeks is much different than the, you know, the week one or two team that we saw go down to Ohio State and get beat. That's not the same football team. This team's found their identity offensively and defensively, and I think their coaches are getting more comfortable with what they're doing, and, you know, I expect a, you know, a really competitive game Saturday.
From your standpoint, coach, what's the most important thing early on in this game that you guys need to do? Because, again, as mentioned, you know, you throw out the things in the rivalry game. That's a good point about them. They are starting to find a little bit of a rhythm despite the losses still racking up, and you guys are where you guys are. So from your standpoint, what's early in the game the most important thing you want to see out of your club?
Well, I want to see a clean football game, and I want to see a clean, sound start. You know, I don't We put a lot of emphasis on situational football here. You know, we put a lot of emphasis on taking care of the football offensively and certainly not giving up big plays on defense and really third downs, both sides of the football, being efficient on that, getting off the field defensively and extending drives on offense. So, you know, I want to see us come out and, you know, eliminate the emotion. You know, I said this the other day in a press conference. I always say college football is 6 days of talk for 3 hours of truth on a Saturday, and those 3 hours of truth are what really tells the story. So all of the stuff leading up to the football game, you know, it's all good, it's fun, it's a rivalry game, and all of that, and, you know, all that stuff is great. But if you don't get a chance to sing the fight song in the locker room afterwards, it's not much fun. So, you know, we got to come out and play focused and play, you know, play just Toledo football, which, you know, for us, when we've been at our best, has been really disciplined and attention to details.
I really like that line, by the way, Coach. That is a great, great line. 6 days of talk, 3 hours of truth. That is fantastic. I might have to borrow that down the line, and we will have the 3 hours of truth beginning at about 3:30 for the kickoff at the Glass Bowl. Battle of I-75 week as Toledo Rockets at the Glass Bowl against the Bowling Green Falcons. It's always entertaining when these two get together. Thanks so much, as always, for the insight and the analysis, Coach, and best of luck out there on Saturday.
Thanks so much, Jim. Have a great day. Go Rockets.
And that is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, taking a few minutes to talk with us here on the ticket. And, that's an interesting way Coach is putting it. A little bit different from what we heard the other day from head coach Mike Jinks of the Falcons. And there is some truth to that. They are finding their rhythm to a degree, and that's part of because of some of the guys are cycling. As we talk with Coach Jinks, they're putting a lot of the younger guys in. You got Morgan, the freshman quarterback, now in there, and it doesn't make him any less scary despite some of the things we've seen or not seen, as it were, out of Bowling Green this year, as they're off to just obviously not a good start. The mirror opposite, though, is true for the Rockets. I think that what happened last week at Eastern, you know, road game to start Mid-American Conference play, it was close throughout. I mean, it says 35-20 for the final, but in many ways, that game was a lot closer. Coach Candle mentioned it. You had a couple of a big pass play and then a turnover on a kickoff is really where the separation got created in that game. But as I said to him, you know, it still says Eastern Michigan, and that'll confuse some people, but these are not your older brother's Eastern Michigan team. This is not one of the dregs of college football that we're used to seeing them. They're trying to move up and improve their program. They're showing the signs of it this year with the loss. They're 4-2, by the way, and 1-1 in MAC play. If you're Eastern Michigan, that's an outstanding start. And they gave the Rockets all they could handle on Saturday in that one. And that's a good rebound game because, as Coach Candle mentioned, guys mentally and physically were drained after that 55-53 crazy shootout on the last day of September, that Friday a couple weeks ago. And you needed a kind of game like this, even if it took a little while, offensively especially, and we know how high-powered offense this Rocket team has, to get them going. But you pick up the road win, you get things back on the right track, you're now 1-0 in Mid-American Conference play, and despite their record and what we've seen out of them this year with Bowling Green, you know, you can't be complacent. And as Coach mentioned, you have to be able to start off the game with some mistake-free football and things of that nature because, yes, it may be a rivalry. But when we zoom out to the fact that what both of these teams are doing here in 2016 specifically, if you're the Rockets, you can't let Bowling Green have an inch. They'll take a mile. And that's all it takes usually in rivalry games is sometimes opponent thinks, hey, you know, we're totally in this. We're going to steal this thing. And that gives them that type of confidence. If you're the Rockets, you got to find a way to snuff that out right away because, you know, at this point, yes, it may be a rivalry, but, and this is no disrespect to Bowling Green, you have these cycles, especially at the Mid-American Conference level in college football. It just is what it is. You can't take a bad loss like this right now. You really can't. This is a tough, tough Western division in this Mid-American Conference. Northern Illinois seems down, but Central is okay. The Rockets have Eastern Division favorite Ohio in 3 weeks coming up. And then you end the season at Western Michigan, who, by the way, in case you hadn't heard, is ranked. Yes, there is a ranked Mid-American Conference football team right now. That's 6-0 Eastern Michigan at number, or Western Michigan, I should say, at number 24. So the Rockets still have their work cut out for them. And then, of course, the one of the Maction games at Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois blatantly down, but Toledo still got to get that monkey off their back, just like Bowling Green is trying to get the monkey off their back, having lost six in a row now in this rivalry game, the Battle of I-75. And even if the teams are in different directions, it's rivalry week. You can't ask for much more. I expect a pretty good football game. I really do. The analytics side of me wants to say, oh, Toledo Rockets should win this game by a couple touchdowns, but that's never, and we all know this, that's never how these kind of things play out. So it'll be a fun game on Saturday. We'll, of course, have that one for you. 2:30 the pregame for the 3:30 kickoff. That's over on our sister station, Talk Radio 100.7. And that's going to do it, by the way, for this Wednesday edition of the Extravaganza. Mike Miller, he's coming up next on Drive Time. So all that fun is straight ahead. No baseball tonight as the AL Division Series both ended a few days ago. We will have Game 5 of Dodgers National tomorrow night, along with some Thursday night football. So enjoy your Wednesday. Mike Miller on Drive Time is up next, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.